Welcome to Reality Student Ministries, and thanks for listening. We are all about learning how to live this life to the fullest, getting the most out of every day. For information on upcoming events, sermon series, and ways to connect, be sure to check us out online at reality.painesvilleag.com, as well as like our Facebook page at RSM. Now here's today's message.
My question to you is, have you ever done something that you don't want to do? Ever done something that you don't want to do? Now, it might not be a nasty job like sticking your hand all the way or arm all the way into a butt of a cow, which is really gross. But it might be something like your parents are like, hey, why don't you clean up your room? Take this trash out. Do the dishes. You're like, oh, I don't want to do this. Or for me, this is something Lauren's like, hey, why don't you go and clean out the kitty litter box? And it's like, no, I don't want to do that. You know why? Because our cat has diarrhea, and it's everywhere, and I don't want to touch that. It's like, bleh. So some of these things, it's just like, I don't want to do it. And there's things that we do that we don't like, and I'll be honest with you. As you get older, there's this thing that you're going to get. It's called a J-O-B, to job. And some of you guys have a job now. Some of you guys are still getting an allowance and working at home and doing chores, and that's awesome. But sooner or later, we'll all at some point get a job. And so tonight, I want to talk a little bit about vocational health. Vocation means job. It means kind of what you're doing. And so we're going to talk a little bit about what that means. And more so in the lens of, guess what? It's important what you do and how you do it. And so this is what I want you to get across. It's not just about what we do, but how we do it that shows who we are. And that is important to God. It's not just about what we do, but it's about how we do it, because that shows who we are, and that is important to God. That is a crucial thing, and that's the main thing I want you guys to get across. That it's not about what we do, but it's about how you do it. Man, are you a person that grumbles and complains the entire time you do it? Or are you one that can say, you know what, I'm going to do this with everything that's within me. I'm going to be a good guy. I'm going to be nice about it. Because let's go back to our kind of theme verse for this whole series. And tonight is the last night of our series. And some of you guys are really excited about that. Some of you guys are like, oh, whatever. But Romans 12:2, do not conform to the patterns of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, right? And so it's this whole idea that we want to be transformed. And the way that we think about work, because some of you guys, I've worked alongside of you. Some of you guys are grumbling and complainers, right? How many of you guys know, be honest, you're out at Rainbow Farms and you're picking and you're like, I hate this. I hate this. My back hurts. I hate this, right? Some of you guys are just like, and then some of you are like, I wish I was them who got to be over there in the greenhouse. I'm stuck over here doing this, right? Some of you guys, I'm not pointing any fingers, but I'm just saying, some of you guys are grumbling and complaining. And here's the thing. I tell people this all the time. If you don't like your job, you got two options. You can either change your job or change your attitude, change your perspective, right? Those are really the only two things that you can do. Change your job or change your perspective, change your attitude about it. And so here's the thing. Liking your job is less about doing something fun and more about being used by God. I'll just be frank and I'll just be honest with you. Liking your job is less about doing something fun. Some of you guys are like, I just want to do something awesome, right? What do you want to do when you grow up? I don't know. It's going to be awesome. I don't know what the most fun thing is. I want to be like the roller coaster tester. Like, I want to test video games for the rest of my life. I want to, because that sounds like so much fun, right? Some of you guys are like, Donnie, you seem like you have a lot of fun because you don't really do anything. You just watch really stupid videos and put them up on Wednesday nights. And then you like take us to cool things like Zip City or Sky Zone and all these fun things. I want to do that. Yeah, my job's awesome. But here's the thing. Every job has the ups and the downs. Every job is woo, this is awesome. And every job's like, this is the poops, right? It might not be literally the poops, but it's close. I have literally come into church, not this church, it was another church, and have had to pick human poop off of the ground because somehow they missed the toilet. I don't understand. I don't know if they were doing like the squat, like instead of the toilet paper on the seat, they just decided to squat and like they totally missed. I don't know. I never thought as a pastor I would have to do that, but I did, and I've done it multiple times. So, liking your job is less about doing something fun, and it's more about being used by God and saying, God, in this instant, in flipping hamburgers, in picking berries, in whatever it might be, mowing lawns, how can I be used by you? Because I believe that you have something incredible in store for me. And so we all have these things that we do that we don't like, but when we know that we're called to be God's hands and feet, that makes all the difference because that changes every aspect of our lives and that changes everything in us. So the verse kind of for tonight, and you can write it up there, is Colossians 3 verse 23. Whatever you do, work at it with all your heart as working for the Lord, not for man. That means in making that bed, do it as unto the Lord. Do it as if Jesus was sitting there and being like, yeah, I don't know about that. Like when you clean your room and like you shove stuff under your bed. And some of you guys, I don't do that. Yes, you do. I still do that. When Lauren's like, can you pick up your stuff? Uh-huh. And then she's like, why is there this stuff under our bed? I don't know. I think the kids did it. And I love having kids because now I can blame a lot of stuff on them. And it's like, man, why is there junk everywhere? Man, this is crazy. And Lauren's starting to catch on, though. So I've stated this before. It's not just about what you do, but it's about how you do it, because that shows who you are, right? And so we see that in everything. You even see that in the chores that you do. How many of you guys like throw fits when you're like, I don't want to clean my room? But your mom's like, okay. I'm appreciative that you cleaned your room, but you threw a hissy fit the entire time you cleaned your room. So it's not just about what we do, but it's about how you're doing it. And see, here's the thing. We tend to strive after things that make us feel good, right? Make us feel, we want these jobs that are going to be awesome. We want this awesome summer job. We want the cool job that makes us feel good, that makes us lots of money so we can buy the cool things that we want to buy, the car, the clothes, the video game, whatever it might be. We want the things that we constantly are striving for. But here's the thing is what the world offers never satisfies, and they even market it that way. They even market it, hey, guess what? This is going to be great, but something even better is coming. Take, for instance, the iPhone, right? iPhone 1. Oh, this is so cool. iPhone 2, 3, 4, 4S, 5, A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, 6, a bazillion, right? It's like, they're like, oh, this is so much better than that last one. So much. I still have the iPhone 4. How lame is that? Oh, loser, right? And so, thank you. So it's one of those things that all of a sudden, we see that the world almost promotes this whole thing that, hey, guess what? It's not going to satisfy. You got to get something better that might satisfy. And so tonight, as we talk about this whole thing of work and what this means, I want to go back to our story from last week. And some of you guys were here, some of you weren't, so I'll catch you up. In 1 Kings 18, that's where we're going to pick up. And this is what we're going to be talking about, because I hate leaving cliffhangers. This is the story of the Israelites. And as most of us know, these Israelites are like, how many of you guys have older brothers or sisters? And sometimes, like, your parents are like, oh my gosh, you are just like John or just like silly Sarah, right? And they drag on the S that long, too. Silly Sarah. Like, oh my gosh, you're just like your older brother. You're just like your older sister and whatever it might be. And you're like, no, right? And so the Israelites are kind of like our older brother and sister. Likewise, I had two older sisters. And so I watched what they did. And I was like, okay, I'm not going to do that, right? Don't talk back to mom. Check, right? Don't try to sneak out of the house. Check, right? And so it's one of those things that, like, you watch your older brother or sister and you're like, sucker, you got caught. I'm not going to do it that way. All right? And so it's one of those things that often we can look at the Israelites, and they're kind of like our older brother and sister in this, that they wanted to go after God, that they're trying to pursue God, right? And so we could relate to them in a lot of cases. And so I want to look at, hey, there's some things that they walked through as our older brothers, sisters, that they screwed up on, and we can learn from that so we don't have to necessarily walk down the same path that they did. And so we look at this situation that we find, and here the Israelites, like, got to this promised land. They're all like, woohoo, God's awesome. But hey, God's awesome, and so am I, and we're supposed to be this great nation. Let's be a great nation for God. Much like us, we're like, yeah, God's awesome. I got saved. I want to be this great Christian for Jesus, right? And so often they were like, hey, what does a great nation of God do? That means that we need to be a powerhouse. That means we don't need to look wimpy. We need to look strong. So one of the biggest things to make us look strong is in our economics, right? Money. We talked about that last week. We need to be financially set so that we can be a powerhouse in economics so that countries don't look at us and be like, hey, let's take them over, right? And so let's do this. And so all of a sudden, good mindset, good things, but they started to say, we need to strive after these things. And so they started realizing that their money came from what they grew, right? Crops and livestock and all that stuff. And so they were very concerned with what's something, now I'm from Midwest, let's see if you guys remember, what's something that every crop has to have to grow? Water, H2O, right? So you got to have the rain. And so all of a sudden, a lot of the kings were like, yeah, that's awesome. We need to make sure that we have the rain. I want to be a nation that's strong. I want to lead a nation that's strong. And so I need to make sure I do whatever it takes to make sure that it's strong and that it's healthy and that we keep the livestock and the economics, the money coming. And so they start looking every which way. And all of a sudden, they started looking at, hey, there's this God that supposedly is in charge of the weather. Hey, I just need to make sure that I'm on his good side. Whether I believe in him or not, let's just make sure that we're on his good side so that if he is real, then we'll at least have, like, water for our crops. If he's not, then, you know, whatever. And so all of a sudden, they started worshiping this God called Baal. And all of a sudden, this guy was like, looking at pictures of him, every picture that's depicted in ancient history has him with like a lightning bolt. So, I mean, he was like a bad dude. He was like awesome. He's like legit. I want him on my team, right? And so it's one of those things that all of a sudden they started, hey, let's make sure we have him on our side and let's be friends with him. And slowly, though, they started to just pursue after this God named Baal. And so they started pursuing and pursuing. And it's kind of like sometimes we want to be friends. Oh, I want to be a friend with him because they're cool and all the stuff. And then slowly you start to just be that person's friend, and it starts to change you. It starts to change the way you think, and all of a sudden, the decisions that you make aren't really the decisions that you would have made a while ago. Now you're trying to make them so that you make this friend happier, or that you find success in your job, or in the things that you do, and you're starting to do whatever it takes just so that you feel good about what you're doing. And so that's kind of where we find ourselves. And this guy named Elijah came, and God sent him and was like, hey, guess what? You're going to have a drought. I'm going to take away the very thing that you trust in, the very thing that led you down here that makes you feel like you're secure. I'm taking away your security, which is water. And so all of a sudden, Elijah told King Ahab this, and he took and a drought came. And we saw that the drought lasted, and all of a sudden people started doing desperate things. They're looking for every water everywhere, and they're like, oh my goodness, right? And they're just trying to figure out, how are we going to do this? We related ourselves to that of, man, so often when things turn bad, we try to fix it ourselves. I just want to fix it myself. And so we're going to pick it up here where Elijah now has called the people of Israel and the prophets of Baal to a showdown, right? WWE, Raw, showdown, breaking some chairs over people's heads. It's going to be awesome, right? And so he shows up, and he's basically like, listen, if your God is real, then follow him. If our God is real, then follow him. And here's the thing. Your God that you've been following has done diddly squat for your drought. Now, why don't you follow the God that says he'll provide for you for everything, and let's see what happens. He said, let's do this. Let's build an altar. And all you prophets of Baal, you guys, why don't you pray to your God? Pray to the thing that you think is your solution. Why don't you do the thing that you think is your solution and see what happens? And I'm going to do the same thing. And whichever God brings down fire is going and burns up our offering is going to be the real God, and we'll follow them.
Oh, okay, yeah, we can do that, because our God's like the weather God, so fire, like lightning strikes wood, right?
That should be a problem.
This is like totally in his tool belt. He could totally do this. And so all of a sudden, this is where we find ourselves. I want to ask you three questions real fast before we move on.
Three questions. Answer is the exact same for every answer. And I just want you to say it to me to know that you heard it and you know it. And I'm even going to give you the answer to the pop quiz. The pop quiz is water, all right? So, first question. What were the people most desperate for?
Water.
Water, right? See, many see desperation as a curse. That's a bad thing. We don't have water. We're in a drought. This is bad. But this was actually a blessing. And I want to tell you why. It's because all of a sudden God brought them to a place of desperation. Brought them to a place of desperation that they needed something other than what they could do on their own to provide for them. All of a sudden, they brought them to a place of desperation where they needed God to intervene. And you think about this, and it's not like they were like, well, you know, it'd be nice if we had water, you know. You know, I could do water on Wednesday nights and like Sunday mornings. Like, yeah, that would be fine if I just did some water there, you know. Like, it's not like they're kind of lackadaisical about the water. It's not like, well, you know, if I get water, it's good, you know. Oh, I just want to sleep in. I'll miss out getting water today. I'll just, you know, and I'll get water. Maybe I'll get water tonight. That's why it says that we should hunger and thirst after righteousness, after God. We need to come to a place where we're desperate for God. Some of us are like that with our water. It's not like we're just like, oh, you know, if I get with God in the morning, if I talk with him, oh, I'll just sleep in a little bit longer. You know, I skipped a Wednesday night or a Sunday morning. You know, it's not really that big of a deal. You know, I'll get it next week. And all of a sudden, we're kind of just lackadaisical when it comes to our relationship with God. And so when we look at desperation, man, we see this as almost a blessing. We're saying, God, man, when was the last time that I was desperate for God? When I said, God, you have to show up in my life, and I need a touch from you. Second question, what was the most valuable commodity in their culture? This is making me so thirsty. And this water tastes so good right now. Oh, so good, right? Anyone else thirsty now? So, the most valuable commodity in their culture was water. It was more valuable than gold, than land, than cattle, livestock. Water was seen to Jews at that time as the source of life. It was seen as the source of life. We have to have water. That's the source of life. Interesting how a couple thousand years later, Jesus was like, or a couple hundred, Jesus was like, hey, I am the living water. Oh, he's the source of life, right? Kind of crazy. People would get that because they're like, water is more valuable than anything. And Jesus is saying he's water. Man, that's awesome. Maybe we should pay more attention to him, right? Third question. In that era, if you leave on a trip for a day or a week, what would you not leave home without? Water! Water, right? You have to have water on your trip. And I know this because guess what? 2,000 years later, guess what? My wife makes sure that we have every time we get in the car, even if it's from our house to the church. She makes sure that Samson, Obadiah, and Donnie, and Lauren all have water, right? We all have our water bottles. We do not leave home without them. They are important. It doesn't matter if it's a 30-minute trip or a 14-hour trip. We have our waters, right? And so all of a sudden, we see that they were going on this trip, and guess what? Water is everything to them. Water is everything to them. And so they were going on this trip. They go to Mount Carmel. And this, depending on where they were from, necessarily, it could have taken a day or up to a week.
So they definitely brought water with them because guess what? It was a drought. They had no idea where they were going to get another water source from. So they're like, hey, we have to bring water with us. Whatever water we have, get all of the water that we have out of the house, honey, and we are going to take it with us because I don't know if we're going to have another water stop on the way. And so all of a sudden, they come to this place. Here, Elijah's like, hey, we're going to have this showdown, fire rain down from heaven kind of thing. If you, and some of you guys, again, Midwest of me knows this, has this healthy fear. If you've had a drought for 3 years, what's the last thing you want coming from the sky?
Fire.
Fire. You do not want fire falling down. I still remember we were driving through Oklahoma once, my family and I, and there was this massive fire that had taken over hundreds and hundreds of acres in the Great Plains, and to the point where you could barely see the front of your car because the smoke was blowing across it. It would jump over highways. It would come towards cities. It was crazy. You know how it started? A guy took a cigarette and flicked it out. A cigarette. That's all it took. And flicked it out. A little brush caught on fire, and then a little bit more, and then a field, and then hundreds of acres. It was crazy, right? It was crazy how a little bit of fire just started this whole thing. So the last thing you want to do is, like, call down fire. This guy's crazy. He's cray-cray. What are you doing, right? But here, I want you to realize what fire represents here. Fire represents power. Fire represents power. You see, you know, that's why you see it used for destruction and all this sort of stuff. Whoever has the fire almost has the power. And so here, Elijah wasn't calling down just to see, hey, who can burn up the most, right? He was literally calling out Baal, the power of Baal, and said, all right, let's see if that guy has any power. And we're going to see if our God Almighty has any power. He was calling on the power. And so he wasn't calling just for a magic show. Let's see which one can burn up some stuff. No, he was calling for, let's see which one has the most power. Which God is the biggest power-wise? So he let the prophets of Baal prepare first. And here's what happened. 1 Kings 18, verse 26 through 29. So they prepared one of the bulls and placed it on the altar. They called on the name of Baal from morning until noontime. That's a long time. That's a really long time, right? Shouting, oh, Baal, answer us. But there was no reply of any kind. Then they danced around, hobbling around the altar that they had made. About noontime, Elijah began mocking them. Man, I love Elijah. He is, like, legit, right? He was, oh, man, I love him. I'm going to be one of those dads that's like, come on, at the games. And it's like, you stink. Come on, referee, make a better call. I was even doing that during a basketball game. I was watching on TV that Lauren was like, what are you doing? I'm like, come on, refs. The stripes should go the other way because you're, like, in prison. You're making such bad calls, right? I literally said that. It was embarrassing. So Elijah began mocking them. You'll have to shout louder, he scoffed, for surely he is a god. Perhaps he is daydreaming. Or he is, I love this, he is relieving himself. He just was like, hey, maybe he's taking a dump. He's dropping the Cleveland Browns off at the Super Bowl, right? All right, so he continues on. He says, or maybe he is away on a trip or is asleep and needs to be awakened. They're like, oh, maybe so. So they shouted louder, and following their normal customs, they cut themselves with knives and swords until blood gushed out. They raved all afternoon until the time of the evening sacrifice, but still there was no sound, no reply, no response. All day they did this. I want you to catch something. And when it talks about they started cutting themselves and all this stuff, they started hurting themselves. Any time that we take our eyes off of God, we hurt ourselves. It might not be physically, but any time that you take your eye off of Jesus, you are going to hurt yourself. Because you think that all of a sudden you know what you're doing and you can do it within your own power. So now it was Elijah's turn. And he Man, there's so much in this little bit, but he rebuilt the altar with these 12 stones. Now, those 12 stones represented Israel's 12 tribes. That when they were originally made, God separated these tribes, 12 of them, into this nation. And all of a sudden, it was almost like he was saying, we are getting back to what God originally formed. I'm going to make this a new thing. You are going to see that we are going back to our relationship with God. And through this, he started calling them, said, come closer. And he started rebuilding this altar, putting the 12 stones. And then what he did next was crazy. It was just crazy. And in verse 33, it says, he turned and said, fill 4 jars with water and pour it on the burnt offering on the wood. Now, why would he ask for water to be put on the wood? Like, it's not like somebody's back there, like a Royal Ranger, and be like, yeah, I've seen that technique done before. Like, no, we'd all be like, no, what are you doing? Water, don't put water on a wood. That's dumb. That's not going to happen. And then what's crazy is he asked for more water. He was like, all right, do it again. 4 more jars. Do it again. Another 4. And this is what's crazy to me. Where did the water come from? It was a drought. It was a drought. No water around. They say that you could see the sea off in the distance, but it was mile-wise, it would have taken them a whole day just to get there and back to bring the water. Guess what so where did the water come from? You know what it came from? The people. He asked for water from the people. He asked for water from what they had brought, their most precious commodity on this trip. They made this trip. A lot of them probably brought the last of what they had. They didn't know how long the trip was going to be, how long they were going to stay up there. And all of a sudden, he asked for water. Their most precious thing that they found valuable to them, the thing that held all of their security, and he asked for it from them. And he asked for it 3 times, and the pastor in me makes me think of, like, sometimes you give an altar call, and people are like, yeah, okay, I need Jesus. And they're like, no, is there anyone else? And people, yeah, okay. Is there anyone else? Okay, like, that's what I feel like Elijah was like, come on. Because people were saying, man, maybe I need to give up my water. And see, right here we see that this was an extreme act of surrender for these Israelites. This was an extreme act of surrender by saying, I'm giving everything that I have to this. And he just kept asking for that commitment. So much so that in verse 35 it says, so that the water ran all around the altar and filled the trench also with water. Now, like, if you guys are like anything like me, you'd be like, oh, the trench is filled. Just take a little bit more of this, right? But like, that didn't happen. But it was so much water that was filling the trench that he had built around it. He had asked for an extreme act of sacrifice, of surrender, of saying, do you trust me? And some of us need to get to a place where we're saying, God, I want to give you everything of me, every aspect of my water, whatever it might be. Maybe it's your relationships. Maybe it's your attitude. Maybe it's the way that you handle situations at school. Maybe it's your lack of respect. Or maybe it's the fact that you don't really, you have this fear. Or maybe you're not bold. You have this timidity and you don't know how to share Christ. God's saying, do you trust me? With everything that's within you, the most precious part of you. Do you trust me? And then Elijah prayed. And in verse 37 says, answer me, O Lord, answer me, so that these people may know that you, O Lord, are God, and you have turned their hearts back. Here's the thing. He prayed for fire to come down. And in that moment, boom, fire consumed the sacrifice and all the water. Because this is what he wanted. He wanted people to experience the power of God. So that's why when we sing, set a fire down in my soul that I can't contain, that I can't control, we're not asking for God to be like, give us heartburn, give us indigestion. I want to take some Pepto and Tums, oh yeah. Right? Like, that's not what we're asking for. We're asking, God, would you show up in power? When we sing that song, some of you guys don't know what we're talking about. When you see, you know, fire fall down, fire fall. We're like, what is this? I don't want fire to fall. This is a wood roof. That'd be horrible, right? We're literally saying, God, we want your power to be evident in our lives. We want your power to be made real in our lives. God, we want to experience the power of God. And that's what Elijah prayed. That God, that they would know and turn their hearts back. Because we believe that when we experience power, we see the power of God, that that transforms lives. I've said this in big people church often, and I've said it back here, but it's okay to come in here and not be okay. It's okay to have screwed up, messed up, and not be okay with how life is going. But when you encounter God, it's not okay to really leave that way. Because when you encounter God, you should have this turning of your heart back to God and say, man, God, you're so much greater than anything I could ever dream of or do. So, fire consumed. He moves on, you know, take care of the prophets of Baal and all that. Then Elijah turned to King Ahab and told him to go eat and drink, for the rain is coming. I love that. In verse 42, it says, so Ahab went up to eat and to drink, and Elijah went up to the top of Mount Carmel. There he bowed himself down upon the earth and put his face between his knees. He postured himself with a purpose. He postured himself there with a purpose of saying, God, I want to humble myself so much. Because the next thing he was going to pray for was something incredible. And you think of, when was the last time that you got on your knees to pray? And I'm talking about getting to a place where we're desperate enough to say, God, we want to see a move. God, we want to be involved in what you're doing. We want to be a part of the move of God. We want not only to see your power, but this next thing is what he's going to talk about. When was the last time you interceded, prayed for your school, your family, your friends? You know, it was one of those things, the last time I got on my knees was for my family, for Lauren and Obadiah and Samson, because it brought me to a place of saying, God, I can't do this without you. I can't do anything without you. And I know that I don't want to lead this family on my own. So it brought me to a place of posture of humility. And so verse 43, it says, he said to his servant, go up now, look towards the sea. And so he went up and looked and said, there's nothing. And he said, go again 7 times. You ever feel like what you do is pointless? Like, if I was that servant, I'd be like, seven? You know how far around the mountain I have to go to look at the sea? Please, you walk around this thing 7 times. Why don't I just sit there and I can pray. I'll just sit around. Like, I would be so frustrated if I was the servant. All right, one, nothing's there still. Nothing's there. Come on. Two, it's been like this for 3 years, Elijah, right? Why couldn't you pray for rain instead of fire, right? All of a sudden, he said on the 7th time, verse 44, look, a little cloud no bigger than a person's hand is rising out of the sea. Then Elijah said to him, go say to Ahab, harness your chariot and go down before the rain stops you. In a little while, the heavens grew black with clouds and wind, and there was a heavy rain. I get goosebumps every time I read that. I've read that so many times in this past week. Throughout the Bible, rain is kind of synonymous, and you can kind of see a lot of how it correlates with grace. So in this story as well, rain is another representation of grace. And Elijah was posturing himself in a position of purpose but humility, saying, God, would your grace come over this land? Do something that we don't deserve. They turned away from you. They did everything wrong. And you showed up and you showed your power, and that's awesome. But God, would you then meet our needs by your grace? Because your grace is sufficient. Sometimes we need to come to God and say, God, fire fall down. Would you show up in my life? Because I can't do that. I've screwed up. I've done what I shouldn't have done. I know it. But God, I want to change. And then we got to get to a place where we say, God, would your grace be sufficient for me? See, it was a 2-verse prayer to pray for that fire to fall down. And instantly, it took a lot longer of a prayer. You know, 7 times, right? It took a lot longer of a prayer for grace, for God's grace, for the rain to fall. Now, I want you to catch this. When we surrender to God, he might not make it right immediately, but he will always make it right eventually. He might not make it right immediately, but when we surrender and we say, God, I'm going to trust you in this, and that's the key word, he will always make it right eventually. So often we come to church and we pray for the fire to fall when we actually need to see the rain fall. We're praying for, yeah, God, would you smite them, almighty smiter, right? Power, would you show up? Would you do something? And God's saying, man, I've done something. We need to start praying for God's grace. God, would your grace be ever real in my life? God, would I understand more of who you are? See, Elijah begged for God's grace. Here's the thing about grace. When grace comes, when it falls, people see the power of God. People see the power of God. They experience it when grace comes, when grace falls. So, I say all that to say, what does this have to do with anything about job-wise or about what you do? What does this have to do with what you do? So, three things. One is realize that you are where you are for a reason. Realize that you are where you are for a reason. That this is crucial. That you're not here by happenstance, accident, circumstance. You're in the family that you're in for a reason. With the crazy relatives, the annoying brother or sister, you're in the school that you're in for a reason. With the people that annoy the stuff out of you for a reason. Right? Realize that you are where you are for a reason. Number two is God's grace is more than enough to take care of any need that we might have. How many of you guys know that when those people poured out all their water and surrendered it to God on that altar, when Elijah said, nope, more, more. Oh my goodness, why is he calling for all of our water? How many of you guys know that they got back everything that they gave and even more so? Because the reality is we can't ever outgive God. And he opened up the heavens and a heavy rain came down. And what an awesome example of God's grace being sufficient and more than enough for them. And then this third one is I want you guys to think through identifying the issue in your life that you need to let go of and pour out to God. What is that water that you are holding onto in that jar that you might have? What is that water that you're holding onto that you're saying, no, I need this to survive. I need this. This is who I am. Whether it's a dating relationship, whether it's your emotions, whether it's your attitude, bitterness, fear, timidity, pride. What's that issue that you're saying, man, I need to give this over? Because tonight, I'm calling just like Elijah says, man, can we pour that out and trust God completely, that his power and his grace would be there for us? Now, this series has talked a lot about being transformed. And some of you guys have seen the decorations in the back here, and some of you are like, oh, that's weird and pretty. But I did it with a purpose. And I didn't explain it on the first week or the second week or any week until now for a reason. And I guess I could have. But this is why it is. If you see one of those are just a big one of these. It's just looks like a little stick thing. And so all of a sudden, this is kind of a representation of us. And sometimes we need to allow God to pull us, to stretch us, and to open us up. And all of a sudden, we see that God's created us for so much more. And all of a sudden, we can be something so incredible. Because every one of those started out just kind of like one of these, just a stick, just a little thing. But then I had to stretch it and open it and work with it. And then I got it to look like this. And I was able to hang it. And this was a reminder of saying, hey, you know what? God's called us to be transformed in every avenue of our life. And some of us need to get to a place where we say, God, would you open us up? Would you search my heart? Would you see if there's any impure thing in me? God, I want to pour out my life to you. I surrender everything to you. And so tonight, as you guys leave, we're actually going to give each one of you one of these as a reminder of saying, hey, guess what? God's called us to live a transformed life, to live a life that goes after him. And we've said it before. Last week we even stated it. If Jesus is not Lord of all, eventually, in your life, he's not going to be Lord at all. And so it comes to this point where Jesus is coming at us and saying, are you going to pour out everything? Are you going to trust me in this? You have been carrying this water a long way, and now you've come into here, into church on a Wednesday night. And Jesus is saying, are you going to give me what you've been holding on to? Maybe you did something stupid this last week. Maybe you're holding on to some regret over the past several months, years. Maybe it's just a culture of thinking that you have that, man, I just got it going on, and people keep telling me the stuff. It's just frustrating the heck out of me. And you need to give that over to God. So whatever it is tonight, man, maybe you need to just get with God and say, God, I surrender everything to you. So we're going to have Austin and Emily, if you come up, and we're going to go back into kind of that chorus of with everything as kind of a declaration of saying, God, with everything that's within us, would you be Lord of all? And so why not tonight? Why don't we go ahead and stand?
Thanks again for listening to this message from Reality Student Ministries. Our hope is that you've learned a little bit more of who God is and who he has called you to be. For information on how you can get connected to our student ministry, be sure to check us out online at reality.painesvilleag.com or like our Facebook page at RSM. Now get out there and have an incredible day.